But now we are very pleased to welcome to the program lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien answered the bat signal.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
So, one of Sam's top five, number two out of Fox 9. So, just 4 days after the death of George Floyd and a day before former Minneapolis police chief Derek Chauvin was arrested, federal and state prosecutors were negotiating a possible plea deal with Chauvin. Sources familiar with the scuttled negotiations say it would have been a universal deal that would have also included state murder charges as well as federal civil rights charges. Those intense negotiations delayed a previously announced press conference that took place on Thursday, May 28th, by nearly 2 hours. And so, you know, again, here you have this particular story. It seems rather interesting. Obviously, wanted to get your perspective on it and what it could potentially tell us. I know we're kind of doing the speculation route here, but we are kind of curious, you know, where your head is at in light of this development.
Sure. Well, you know, I have the benefit of working with attorneys that do criminal defense and some that do prosecution. Our firm does some contract prosecution work, so I absorb some by osmosis, and I understand a little bit of how these negotiations go. And I'm just speculating here, but my sense is that the invitation to look at a plea deal, bargain or plea deal, came from the prosecution. And if you look at, you know, previous cases where involving an officer involved shooting or where there was a death, you have the Muhammad Noor case in Minneapolis where he was convicted, but that's on appeal. So he was convicted on the same counts that Chauvin was charged with, but they're appealing that. So it's not a done deal that conviction is going to stick. You had the Philando Castile death in Ramsey County, where the officer was acquitted. So it's very difficult to convict a police officer of murder, especially manslaughter. You know, a little bit different story, but murder is definitely harder. So perhaps there was some thinking of let's get murder three to stick, but in a plea deal versus risking having an acquittal in court. So that's where this could have originated from. And from Chauvin's point, it could have been, we'll take a deal for a lesser sentence. They're probably going to try to get him to accept plead guilty to the charges, but in exchange get a lesser sentence. That's probably where this all started. And I would say that the fact that they delayed that press conference, that's coming out now, they delayed a press conference, and U.S. Attorney McDonald made that comment about, we thought we had something to announce. They had to have been pretty far along, and they must have thought they were close to a deal. This wasn't just something that was thrown out there and the defense walked away. They had to have been in some pretty serious negotiations if they were delaying news conferences, even making reference to having an announcement beforehand. So they had to be pretty close. So I don't know where it broke down, but it's an interesting wrinkle. And if you guys remember, when Keith Ellison had his press conference and announced that he was stepping in, one of the reporters questioned him about a plea deal, and he didn't dismiss it out of hand. He kind of hesitated and said, we haven't discussed that yet. And I was kind of shocked by that you would have thought that Ellison would have said, absolutely not, no plea deal. So I think this is a reflection of the fact from the prosecution side that it is not easy to convict an officer, and they were possibly looking at some other way to achieve justice here and appease those that want to see justice done.
Is a plea deal justice, though? I mean, is it possible? We're all speculating here, so I'm just going to throw out a possibility. It seems like the most likely scenario is that the defense side walked away from this situation. We don't know, so we're just guessing. But it seems like that's probably the most likely scenario, especially given that they were delaying a news conference, that McDonald made that comment at the beginning of the news conference. I don't think you make that comment if your side was the one that decided this isn't good enough, we're going to trial, we're getting a conviction. So in that long rambling setup, is it possible that the defense believes that they're gonna avoid a conviction at trial? I mean, is it just that simple that the defense is confident that that there's information that has yet to be released that when it comes out in a trial setting will make it extremely difficult to get that conviction?
I would say, yeah, I would say given the defense in this case, I mean, this is not a lot of folks think this is a slam dunk case. It is not a slam dunk case.
No.
And the defense,
it never is when it involves a police officer, right? It's never a slam dunk.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's never.
Because at least we haven't
seen always have that. Yeah. You always have that justified use of force question. And it's so even when you've got it on on video. I mean, you look back to 30 years ago with Rodney King. Everybody I was a lot younger then, but everybody thought these guys are going to get convicted, and they all got acquitted in state court. You just never know. And so I think for the defense attorney, they're probably thinking, you know, we'll listen, and perhaps there was something put on the table that was worth listening to. And then when I'm guessing that they could not, my sense is, and again, purely speculation, is they couldn't come to terms on the length of the sentence. And that's probably where it broke down. And I think you're right, Drew. I think the defense was the one that walked away.
Let's look at the timeline here real quick. So looking at the story, and again, I understand talking with lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, you may or may not have the answer to this, but let's go down this road just real quick. So this was 4 days after the death of George Floyd, and this was the day before Chauvin was arrested. When do we know how that fits? How does this potential plea deal that was being talked about, where does that fall in the timeline to Keith Ellison being announced that he was going to be taking over the case? Do we know?
We don't, John. That's a good question. We don't know how early Ellison was involved behind the scenes.
So let me stop you there real quick, and you're probably going to go there, but let me sort of set the stage here, because what I'm wondering is, and I'm going to add to this, what I'm wondering is, and again, speculation, but, you know, is it possible that Ellison was brought on board the case to take it over with the assumption that there was going to be a plea deal? And I'm wondering if the charges that Ellison brought speak at all to that potential dynamic. So, for example, there's discussion of a plea deal. Ellison hasn't taken over yet, but they think they're going to be able to reach one. So Ellison is appointed to be the one to take over the case, in which case he would be overseeing the potential plea deal, and this would be over rather quickly. The defense decides to pull the plea deal, and then Ellison goes and lays out those charges. Would those charges have any sort of bearing on that type of scenario playing out?
No, my understanding is that Ellison was brought in at the request of Freeman, and also it was the Floyd family's desire to have Ellison prosecute the case. So I think that was the reason that Ellison, I think, was brought in. I think we've had this discussion before about why the murder 2 charge and how difficult that's going to be. Murder 3 is hard enough. I think that could, and the fact that he didn't foreclose the idea of a plea deal from the reporter's question in his first press conference, perhaps the murder 2 charge was added. Perhaps the plea discussions are still on the table. And they're trying, and the fight is over making, and seeing how much time that Chauvin would serve in prison. Mm. So this could have been, so the murder 2 charge could be some sort of a bargaining chip to try to get more time, to get the defense to concede a longer sentence. Cause I'm thinking that's where it broke down, is the length of the sentence. They want to have a murder 3 charge stick. They want the precedent of an officer pleading guilty to murder 3. And perhaps it has something to do with what they're fighting in the Nora case on the appeal. But they really seem to want a murder charge to stick here, a murder conviction or a murder plea.
We're talking with
lawyer
extraordinaire Jeffrey O'Brien. Got a question from a caller before we go to break. Anthony in St. Paul, you're on with Justice and Drew. Jeff O'Brien, quickly, please.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. I'm just going to say right off the bat, this could be considered tinfoil hat territory. Perhaps Keith Ellison raised this to second-degree murder, knowing that there will not be a conviction at trial, therefore Chauvin getting off. So possibly wants to have the riots happen.
All right. Do you think that's a possibility, Jeff?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah. I certainly hope not. I mean,
I usually would expect the State Patrol to defend statues at the Capitol, and right? That's not happening anymore. So I don't know what to believe in this world anymore.
Look, like we said before, I think Ellison's fine either way. Right. I think Ellison's fine either way. If he gets the conviction, he gets the conviction. And if he doesn't, the court of public opinion right now is already on his side. They've already decided they won't blame him. They'll blame the system. So, you know, my only thing, I know we got to break. My only thing is I find it very interesting, and I'm with Drew on this. This whole plea deal, you know, is very interesting that it fell apart. And I'm just, I can't help but sort of scratch my head and go how much of this played into potentially Ellison deciding to take this case and whether the defense went, oh, that's who you're going to put in charge? Okay, we're not taking the plea deal. We're moving forward. But again, that's just, you know, sort of my own little world, and my head is filled with all kinds of weird things.
I think,
you know, the fact that Ellison didn't indicate it still might be a possibility, or they hadn't discussed it. I think he did say in his press conference, we haven't discussed it. So I don't know if they've, I mean, obviously, this has been discussed between Freeman and Erica McDonald, but maybe what they're trying to do is head off the second wave of unrest in the city if there was an acquittal, which is a very real possibility that there could be an acquittal,
yeah,
and maybe only a conviction on manslaughter. Let's cut a plea deal. Let's put them away. Let's say we've got justice, and let's move and let's try to keep things under control.
Tom in St. Paul, quickly, please. Tom.
Hello, Tom.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. You're on with Jeff O'Brien. What's your question?
Oh, hi there. Sorry, you broke up. A question for you about the second degree charge. Is there any chance you think that Ellison bumped it to second degree? Because as Justice and Drew alluded to earlier, he might have gotten wind there was bad blood from way back between these two.
Would the previous relationship between Floyd and Chauvin, could that have been a factor in the increase in charges from third to second?
When I first heard the increase in charges, that was my thought. But then when I read the amended criminal complaint, there was no reference to any of that. So I don't know if that's the basis for the increased charge, you would have thought that they would have put those facts in the amended complaint. So I guess we'll have to see if this goes to trial, what comes out about that relationship.
Yeah.
But at this point, they've not said anything. Nobody from the prosecution side has indicated that the previous relationship was in any way, a factor here.
Jeff, hang on the line. We're way late. We do have a couple of people calling in, and we are going to talk with Jesse Kelly. And I have one more thing I'd like to add. So lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien is on hold. We're going to talk with Jesse Kelly, our good friend, coming up. We'll get his thoughts on this as well, along with the current culture war that we are in. It's a friend of the show, Josh, on Twitter. Wrote this, the prosecution, getting back to Chauvin prior to his arrest, the possibility of a plea deal, said the prosecution probably knew there was a chance of acquittal. So they added the second degree charge as an intimidation tactic to convince Chauvin to take a plea deal for third degree. While in school for criminal justice, I was taught that this was common practice. And I think you had mentioned that a little bit more. Jeff O'Brien, who's still on the phone with us. But I wanted to give you, before we go to Rob Dorr, I wanted to give you a chance to comment on Josh's tweet as well, that the second degree charge could have potentially been an intimidation tactic to convince a plea deal for third degree.
I kind of agree with him. Yeah, it definitely, I think, was thrown in there, was added to, well, I think it was, there was political reasons why it was added too, but I think that it definitely was in there as an incentive for a plea deal on murder three. I don't know that it's an intimidation tactic, but it was definitely added to try to accomplish something, because they're not going to get a conviction on murder two.
All right, let's go to Rob Dorr, Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus, a friend of the show, friend of the community. Good morning, Rob. What's your question for Jeff O'Brien?
Friend of America.
That's right. Yeah, friend of America.
Oh wow, gosh. I don't know where to go from there. My question is, I'm wondering what Jeff thinks about how much Graham versus Connor is going to come into play with this, just because I have a hard time thinking that the prosecution can prove intent or a depraved mind by kneeling on it. I mean, the Graham versus Connor says that an officer has to be judged by the reasonableness of his actions to what other officers would believe, and not with the benefit of hindsight. I'm wondering how Jeff thinks that might come into play.
And hold on, Jeff, before you answer that question, Rob, we're not going to invite you on if you're going to steal Drew and ours prep. I mean, we were just going to talk about, what did you say, Grant versus...
Graham Crackers.
Graham versus Crackers, yeah.
Okay. That
was, yeah, man, that was my next question, Rob.
This is right there on my sheet here. Jeez, his pinky's up this morning. Jeff, what's your response to that?
Well, Rob, that's a great question. And, you know, if you read the amended criminal complaint, there's a lot of facts in there that a defense attorney is going to seize on in creating, not only going after the murder two, but the murder three. The whole issue is the video shows Chauvin kneeling on George Floyd's neck and him saying, "I can't breathe." But if you the most damning fact in the entire criminal complaint is the one that says that Floyd first said he couldn't breathe when they were trying to put him into the squad. He was saying that he was claustrophobic and he was starting to have some sort of a panic attack when they tried to put him in the back of the car, which is why he ended up on the ground. So you're going to have this is the issue in the Knorr case, the depraved mind. You certainly are. I don't know how you're going to get intent. You know, there's Ellison mentioned at his press conference that there, you know, the underlying felony was assault. They're going for felony murder. I don't see how your depraved mind, you know, I don't, it's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough haul. That's probably why they were talking a plea deal.
Rob, does that answer your question?
Yeah, you know, I think that would make sense. I mean, if they could get a plea deal for murder three, and you know, Chauvin gets reduced charges, something akin to what he would have gotten with a manslaughter two, which I think would be a significantly easier case to make. I think that would make sense. Do you think that it was that Ellison getting involved was part of the derailing of the plea deal, or do you think that something else may have caused that to fall apart?
No, I don't think it was Ellison getting involved, because even Ellison, when the reporter asked him at his initial press conference when he took over, that he didn't, and I was a little bit surprised that he didn't categorically reject the idea of a plea deal. He just said, "We haven't talked about it. We haven't discussed it yet." My assumption is where it broke down is the prosecution wanted a longer sentence than what Chauvin and his attorney were willing to agree to.
All right, thanks,
Rob. Let's go to Mark in Fridley. Good morning, Mark. You're on with Justice and Drew and lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien.
Hey, Jeff. Hey, guys. I just want to know about the first degree charges, because if, as has been reported, there's eyewitnesses and people making statements that these two knew each other, had a previous beef, and they admitted knocked heads. Ellison's
hold on, Mark, I want to jump in here real quick, because this is just coming out this morning, just a little bit ago. That man who claimed George Floyd and Derek Chauvin bumped heads and had a beef, he has since taken that back. He has revised his story. This is the Derek Penny. David Penny.
David Penny.
He initially told CBS News that they knew each other, that they'd had a beef, there was no way that Chauvin wouldn't have recognized George Floyd, according to Penny, in that moment because of the beef that they had had. He came out. He told CBS News, there's been a mix-up. I was confusing George Floyd and another fellow coworker. What? I apologize, he wrote. I apologize for not doing my due diligence and placing you, the CBS News, in a very uncomfortable situation. So that's one of those sort of stories and narratives that got injected into the conversation and has now been mainstreamed, and everybody, okay, well, now there's more to this. And then he comes out a few days later and walks it back. So, Mark, I apologize for interrupting you, but I wanted to make sure that you had that information before you asked your question.
No, and I appreciate that very much. I mean, we all need to come to an alternate conclusion based on new information. So I was unaware of that, and thanks for that, because if these two knew each other, had a beef, knocked heads, then that should have been kicked into first degree, and Ellison jumped the gun.
Let me just be clear. First-degree murder requires premeditation. You know, in intentional, you know, the second degree is where you intend to murder, to kill someone. There was, and I know that there was some early on, some demand from the family that he be charged with first degree. There's absolutely no evidence that he premeditated killing George Floyd that night.
Thank you. Mark, thanks for the phone call. Jeff, thank you for the extended time this morning,
yeah,
man. We
seriously.
Really do appreciate it. As always, man, you're always so accommodating to us, and we owe you for that. Thank you.
Take care, buddy.
No problem. Happy to help. All right.
Look, this is a really interesting, and we can get into a little bit more of this. We're going to dive into the protesters toppling the Columbus statue on the Minnesota Capitol here coming up in a few minutes. But this change in story from this David Penny, right? This was picked up by everybody. CBS ran it. Fox News ran it. We talked about Garbage Human. Mike Mullen in the City Pages ran it. Okay. And this certainly, obviously, it raises sort of, in my mind, we're never going to know, but it raises sort of weird red flags about what happened here. Be that as it may, you step back from this further, and it is the perfect example of why you can't overreact to this stuff. Now, we all covered it, and like I said, I feel totally, as hosts, right, you see stuff like this coming out as a change in story, everybody was talking about this and covering it, and you made a great point about how that's part of the narrative now, and it won't go away. In the eyes of people examining this now, it's there, it's cemented, and regardless of whether or not this dude walks it back in people's minds, they've made their opinions up that these two know each other and are probably played into this. But it does go to show, going back to the whole event in the first place, you just can't react at face value. Dan Bongino, man, I dig that guy. Former Secret Service,
yeah,
was getting hammered yesterday on Twitter because people don't like it when somebody's up on Capitol Hill speaking the truth about things. Be that as it may.
It goes against the narrative.
Yeah, seriously, man. I don't know. I saw some very prominent blue check marks going, the Dan Bongino guy, he's just an idiot. And that's all they had.
Okay.
But he's always saying, you gotta wait. You gotta wait before you. I mean, it's okay to talk about it. It's okay to discuss it if it's in the mainstream media. But before you start latching on to narratives and conclusions, man, you gotta wait.
Especially in an instance like what happened. What happened here. I mean, and as tragic and as awful and as terrible as that was, you don't want to do anything permanent in the heat of that moment, in the heat of that emotional time. And that's what they allowed to happen here in Minneapolis, and that's why half of our city is reduced to rubble.
We live in a very progressive state. It's a progressive state where if you get enough people together and you can come to a consensus on something, you can get things changed. Murals in the St. Paul City Council chambers get changed because they are no longer relevant and they're insensitive to some people. Lakes can be renamed,
sure,
because the individuals that are attached to them people don't like because they had a storied past, right? However, that's not the world we live in anymore. There is no having discussions. There is no talk about it. There are no meetings. We're just going right to ripping stuff down. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened yesterday with the Columbus statue.